Okay, so just one. Anybody has a question? We have time for one question. The question has to be, you know, a question on what we have covered in the past two lessons.
Just a point of curiosity. Where does the Arahat enter the path on this Mahayana chart? If it's, let's say, he's joining the Mahayana path.
What?
An Arahat who has attained liberation and is convinced by the Buddhas to enter the Mahayana path, at which point does he enter the path?
Through the door.
So where do the arhats, the four destroyers, are? If they do enter the minor path, so how, where do they enter the path in the minor path from? It's very straightforward. Nothing difficult about it. They enter through the door. Because prior to entering the minor path, they don't have bodhicitta, yeah? So they have not yet generated the bodhicitta, but then come the day when they generate the uncontrived bodhicitta, then they enter the minor path, and they enter through the minor small path of accumulation. I thought we covered this already 1 year ago.
So
when the four destroyers of the arhats, so when they generate uncontrived bodhicitta, they enter into the minor path, they enter from the minor small path of accumulation. But of course, these arhats already have the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness. Yeah? But it is difficult to say just because of having that realization, they will therefore travel faster or along the various paths to enlightenment. It is difficult to say, and it is not clear in the great treatises. Yeah. But what they still need to do is to accumulate the collections. And the accumulation of the collection, in order to achieve enlightenment in general, takes three great countless eons. Right? So these arhats, when they enter the Mahayana path, then while they're on the Mahayana path of accumulation and the Mahayana path of preparation, these arhats have to accumulate the collections over the first great countless eon, isn't it? So you guys must not mix up what I'm saying now with what I've covered so far, because what we've covered so far in class, the explanation is from the perspective of one who enters the Mahayana path from the beginning, It's not from the perspective of someone who has completed the Hinayana path and then, and then entering the Mahayana path, yeah. So the explanation so far, over the past two lessons is from the perspective of someone entering the Mahayana path from the beginning, yeah. So, okay. But your question is related to someone who has already completed the Hinayana path, who is really an arhat, but is entering the Mahayana path, yeah. So their mode of progress and so forth, of course, differs. So you continue, where we have left off from. Yeah. So the path of the Mahayana superior consists of the minor path of seeing, the minor path of meditation, and the minor path of no more learning. Right? The path of the Mahayana superior. So a person becomes a superior bodhisattva when he enters the minor path of seeing. So prior to that, on the minor path of preparation, the ordinary bodhisattva meditates on emptiness, the ultimate nature of reality, via a meaning generality or a meaning generality of emptiness. Yeah. Then, when the ordinary bodhisattva comes the time when he perceives emptiness directly for the first time, then he enters the minor path of seeing. At that time, he becomes a superior, and he becomes a Sangha jewel, and he possesses the Dharma jewel in his mental continuum. So when a person realizes emptiness directly here, in the case of a bodhisattva who realizes emptiness directly for the first time, then he becomes a superior, yeah? Isn't it? He becomes a Sangha jewel. And he becomes a Sangha jewel, and specifically, he becomes an ultimate Sangha jewel. Ultimate Sangha jewel, because the ultimate Sangha jewel is the actual, the real Sangha jewel. Yeah? Anybody who possesses the Dharma jewel in the mental continuum is a Sangha. In this case, is a Sangha jewel. Yeah. So an ultimate Sangha jewel. So conventionally, usually, you know, we talk about. Conventionally, a Sangha is constituted by four individuals, yeah, four fully ordained monks, let's say. But here, you do not need four, yeah, in the case of a superior being. As long as it is a superior being, that person constitutes, is the Sangha jewel, the real Sangha jewel, the ultimate Sangha jewel, yeah. So if you think about this, then you know it becomes apparent, yeah, that an actual Sangha jewel, the ultimate Sangha jewel, need not be an ordained person. Yeah. Isn't it? You know, usually, we think of Sangha in terms of monks and nuns. Yeah. But if you think about what or who exactly is an ultimate Sangha jewel, then it becomes clear that. Even if in the case of a lay person, someone who is not ordained, let's say, a non-ordained person but who has directly perceived emptiness, that person is the real deal, the real Sangha jewel, the ultimate Sangha jewel, isn't it? So when the Bodhisattva realizes emptiness directly for the first time, so this wisdom of directly perceiving emptiness becomes an actual antidote to the afflictions. Yeah. So this wisdom directly perceiving emptiness is the actual antidote to the afflictions because it can actually counteract and destroy the afflictions. Yeah. So this wisdom directly perceiving emptiness is the Dharma jewel. Is the Dharma jewel.
어떻게 제가다 답변은 이제는 소나 시대 다 사탕보 통인도 가나 다 사탕보 다 토람 다 토민도 가나 다 랑랑도 리냐바 산제바 니야바 어떻게 나 숨도 나
Okay, so the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness in this case, in the continuum of this bodhisattva, this wisdom directly perceiving emptiness is the Dharma Jewel, and it is true path, isn't it? So simultaneous with perceiving emptiness directly for the first time, the bodhisattva achieves the first bhumi, or the first ground, which is called very joyful. Yeah. So it is said that at this point in time, the bodhisattva feels, you know, that his enlightenment is certain. Yeah, he can see it coming, you know, that he's definitely going to be enlightened.
Yeah.
So when the bodhisattva enters into the minor path of seeing, he enters into the minor path of seeing. He enters into the minor path of seeing while in meditative equipoise. That happens in meditative equipoise. So he is in meditative equipoise directly perceiving emptiness, right? So at this point in time, his wisdom directly perceiving emptiness is directly perceiving emptiness, but yet also at the same time, this wisdom becomes an actual antidote to the afflictions. Yeah. It is powerful enough to act as direct or actual antidote to the afflictions. Yeah. So such a mind, it is called an uninterrupted path. So an uninterrupted path is not just the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness. It's the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness which can act as the actual antidote to the afflictions. And simply speaking, such a mind is called an uninterrupted path. Okay, so if you look at the chart, yeah. So on the there is the uninterrupted path for the mind, a path of seeing, isn't it? Right? So the uninterrupted path, the minor path of seeing, acts as the actual antidote to the afflictions. Yeah, right. It acts as the actual antidote to certain kind of affliction. Yeah. So the afflictions here can be divided into two. The afflictions they are abandoned by the minor path of seeing, and they are the afflictions they are abandoned by the minor path of meditation, yeah.
어떻게니? 다 통랑도 떡이 빵봉에 통방 통방 니몽세디 간대질 쓰기나 쓰나 조다 군다 그랬지. 다 이제 군다 그랬던 줄라. 다 군다 그랬던 줄. 다 그 락바차기 하래. 그러면 생겨날 때는 락바차. 제단 뒤다 당부 통랑도 떡이 다 군다 된 줄 빵해. 어디서 뭐야?
Okay, Ujibo. Ujiba. So the uninterrupted path or the minor path of seeing, because it is an uninterrupted path, isn't it? It acts as an actual antidote to the afflictions, isn't it? But here, the uninterrupted path or the minor path of seeing acts as an actual antidote to which affliction? Right? So in your afflictions in general, you know, it can be divided into afflictions that are abandoned by the minor path of seeing, and the afflictions that are abandoned by the minor path of meditation, isn't it? So in short, there are the minor path of the path of seeing abandonments and path of meditation abandonments. So of the two, the uninterrupted path of the minor path of the uninterrupted path of the minor path of seeing acts as an actual antidote to the path of seeing abandonments. And what is the path of seeing abandonment? The path of seeing abandonment is the intellectually acquired afflictions. So when you compare the intellectually acquired afflictions with the innate afflictions, the intellectually acquired afflictions are relatively more, relatively coarser. Yeah, much more gross. No, I have a feeling that it's Wujib. I don't know anyway. Okay, see, so the uninterrupted path or the minor path of seeing acts as an actual antidote to which affliction? Is it the afflictions that are abandoned by the path of seeing or the afflictions abandoned by the path of meditation? Of the two, the uninterrupted path and the minor path of seeing act is the actual antidote to the afflictions that are abandoned by the path of seeing. So in short, they are the path of seeing abandonments. Yeah. So then what exactly is the path of seeing abandonment? What are the afflictions abandoned by the path of seeing? Of the two, between the two, intellectually acquired afflictions and innate afflictions, it is the intellectually acquired afflictions that are abandoned the uninterrupted path of the minor path of seeing acts as the actual antidote to the intellectually acquired afflictions. Okay? The uninterrupted path of the minor path of seeing acts as the actual antidote to the intellectually acquired afflictions, right? So this uninterrupted path is a specific kind of mind and wisdom in meditative equipoise, isn't it? Right? But come the time when the intellectually acquired afflictions are abandoned, they are destroyed when abandoned. This also happens in meditative equipoise. So comes the time when while in the meditative equipoise, the intellectually acquired afflictions are destroyed, then that time, that mind is given the name, the path of release. The path of release. Yeah.
Otone, that Tondani, that Tinema, that such a Pajiman, number of Tokshin, that Tondani, Chain was Satan, such a Pajiman, number of Lumps and Tokshin, nearly near Chain of Wachana, that so did it, Karsena, that Pajiman said it. Nimon.
See, we see in the chart, for sake of simplicity, there is an uninterrupted path and a path of release associated with each ground, yeah, all the way, yeah. Isn't it? Okay, for sake of simplicity, there is an uninterrupted path and a path of release associated with each of the 10 grounds. Okay, so the uninterrupted path refers to, in short, the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness, which acts as an actual antidote to any of the afflictions in general. And the path of release in general refers to the that mind that has been freed from any of the afflictions.
Are you confused? Are you getting clear? Oh, no. Hmm?
There are these two paths, the uninterrupted path and the path of release. The uninterrupted, both occur in meditative equipoise. And meditative equipoise, not like the ones you engage in every night, but you know, the ones where you know, directly perceiving emptiness, all that kind of meditative equipoise, you know. During that meditative equipoise, directly focusing on emptiness, during the time when that mind acts as the mind is capable of acting as the actual antidote to the afflictions, then during that time, that meditative equipoise is termed the uninterrupted path. But, you know, then when the afflictions, the respective afflictions are abandoned, you know, when the afflictions are abandoned immediately, you know, from that moment on, and for that duration of the meditative equipoise, which happens in one session, in one go, that time when the afflictions are abandoned already, during that time, that meditative equipoise during that time is given the name, the path of release. Okay, it's like two halves of a soccer game, you know, basically. Just think, it's one continuous game, you know, but you know, it's split into two halves, you know, both uninterrupted path and the path of release, both are wisdom or primordial awareness of meditative equipoise, or both are wisdoms of meditative equipoise. But when the individual arises from the meditative equipoise, he enters into the post-meditative, enters into post-meditative equipoise. This is in general how the bodhisattvas progress in terms of abandoning afflictions. They enter into meditative equipoise. And then the meditative equipoise consists of the path of the uninterrupted path and the path of release. So both are wisdom of meditative equipoise. Then when they arise from the meditative equipoise, they enter into the post-meditative equipoise. And then you know, in between they do stuff. And then they enter again into the next meditative equipoise, which consists of the uninterrupted path and the path of release. And then from there, they arise from the meditative voice into the post-meditative voice, and this is how they basically move along. It's basically like us going to sleep, you know, then waking up, and then going back to sleep, and waking up, that kind of thing. Yeah. Well, it's not a bit, it's something now.
Okay,
Okay, so this is how the bodhisattvas progress towards full enlightenment. They enter into meditative poise, and then where they generate the uninterrupted path, which is followed by the path of release. Both are wisdom of meditative poise. And when they arise from there, they enter into the post-meditative equipoise, where they actualize the post-equipoise wisdom. And then, later on, then they enter into meditative equipoise again, and arise from it, and so forth. And this is how they progress through the 10 grounds. And through progressing along the 10 grounds of the Bhumis, they gradually abandon the obscurations. So first, they abandon the afflictive obscurations, and then they go on to abandoning the knowledge obscurations. So, in short, the bodhisattva, when he realizes emptiness directly for the first time, so his wisdom directly perceiving emptiness becomes the uninterrupted path, which can act as the actual antidote to the intellectually acquired afflictions. Then he achieves in the meditative equipoise the path of release, where the intellectually acquired afflictions are completely abandoned. Then, when he arises from the meditative equipoise, he achieves what we call the post-equipoise wisdom of the first ground. So during the post-meditative equipoise, the bodhisattva strives, you know, in amassing a huge collection of merit in order to be able to abandon the path of meditation abandonments. So during the first ground pose equipoise wisdom, when he arises from meditative equipoise, he achieves the first ground pose equipoise wisdom. So during the pose meditative equipoise, the bodhisattva strives in accumulating a huge collection of merit in order to be able to abandon the path of meditation abandonments. In order to abandon the innate afflictions which are abandoned by the path of meditation. Okay. So the innate afflictions which are abandoned by the minor path of seeing are categorized into three types. Yeah, the big innate afflictions, the middling innate afflictions, and the small innate afflictions. Okay? These three are, okay, these three are further divided into three each. So all together making a total of nine objects of abandonment, or nine kinds of, you know, or nine levels of the innate afflictions which are abandoned by the Mahayana path of meditation. Ah, Ujibo.
아니 딜레마 초에 누가 나 산입에 넘도는 토면 거래 되게 다 니들 침대 침대 방발했어요.
If we base our discussion on the chart, yeah, this chart, not in the notes, yeah. If we base our discussion on this chart for sake of simplicity. So, the Bodhisattva, after abandoning the intellectually acquired afflictions, he arises from the meditative equipoise and he enters in the post-meditative equipoise, isn't it? And he, during the post-meditative equipoise, he accumulates a lot of merit in order to be able to abandon the innate afflictions that are abandoned by the Mahayana path of meditation, isn't it? So come the time when this Bodhisattva's wisdom directly perceiving emptiness becomes powerful enough to abandon the big innate affliction, right? Then come that time when his wisdom directly perceiving emptiness become powerful enough to act as the actual antidote to the big innate affliction, then when he doing in meditative repose, so that wisdom directly perceiving emptiness is the first ground uninterrupted path of meditation. If you look at the chart, on the first ground, there are two uninterrupted paths, isn't it? If you look at the second uninterrupted path, that is an uninterrupted path for the path of meditation, isn't it? So that is the first ground uninterrupted path of meditation. That first ground uninterrupted path of meditation is the actual antidote to the big innate afflictions. When the big innate affliction is abandoned, he achieves the a path of release, and this path of release is the second ground path of release. Yeah, where the big of the big innate afflictions are abandoned. There's big, medium big, and small big, right? So this is the big of the big.
That
So, I mentioned earlier that the innate afflictions that are abandoned by the minor path of seeing consists of the big innate afflictions, the middling innate afflictions, and the small innate afflictions, isn't it? So each are further divided into three. So you have the big of the big, medium of the big, small of the big. Then big of the medium, medium of the medium, small of the medium. Then you have the big of the small, medium of the small, and the small of the small, all together making nine, right? So here, the first ground uninterrupted path of meditation acts as the actual antidote. According to this chart, it acts as the actual antidote to the big of the big innate afflictions. According to this chart. So, we don't have time to, you know, go through every single ground. This happens and that happens. But I mean, if you know how to count, you know, then it is by the time the Bodhisattva achieves the path of release of the seven ground path of release, by that time, the Bodhisattva has already abandoned the big and the middling afflictions. Yeah. Right? Isn't it? So, when the Bodhisattva achieves the seven ground path of release, that Bodhisattva has really abandoned the three of the big afflictions and the three of the middling afflictions, right? Tewo? So there is the uninterrupted path of the... There's the seven ground uninterrupted path, isn't it? There's the seven ground uninterrupted path, isn't it? So if we are... because we are basing our discussion on this chart, which means there are other views, basically, that's the point. Based on this chart, so the seven ground uninterrupted path acts as the direct antidote to all three of the small afflictions. The big of the small, middling of the small, and the small of the small. So when the Bodhisattva achieves the eighth ground path of release, the Bodhisattva is completely liberated from all the afflictions. Yeah, yeah. All the afflictions have been destroyed in his mind. Yeah. And this, that milestone is labeled as each in this chart. Yeah. So at this point in time, the Bodhisattva becomes a full destroyer. So the Bodhisattva at this point is totally free or liberated from the afflictions, or totally liberated from the afflictive obscurations. So if you remember the discussion from the previous module on tenets, afflictive obscurations are not necessarily afflictions. Right? So prior to abandoning the afflictive obscurations, the Bodhisattva is not able to act on abandoning the knowledge obscurations, yeah, isn't it? So after achieving the eighth ground path of release, then the Bodhisattva enters into post-meditative repose of the eighth ground. During the post-meditative repose, the Bodhisattva accumulates a huge collection of merit, and then come the time when his wisdom directly perceiving emptiness becomes powerful enough, you know, to act as the actual antidote to the knowledge obscurations, then that wisdom then becomes the uninterrupted path of it becomes the eighth ground uninterrupted path. Oh, it is only when the eighth ground uninterrupted path is actualized, is only then does the work on abandoning the knowledge obscuration starts. Only then. So if you look at the chart, this particular chart shows an uninterrupted path for each of the shows the uninterrupted paths for the 8th, 9th and 10th ground, isn't it? So there are three uninterrupted paths, isn't it? These three uninterrupted paths are the actual antidotes to which obscuration? The knowledge obscurations, isn't it? So why are there three uninterrupted paths that are the actual antidotes to the knowledge obscurations? There are three because, based on this chart, you know, the knowledge obscurations are also divided into three. The big knowledge obscuration, the middling knowledge obscuration, and the small knowledge obscurations. Yeah. So these three uninterrupted paths here, the three uninterrupted paths of the 8th, 9th, and 10th ground are the actual antidotes to these three levels of knowledge obscurations.
Okay. tire, that on the Milolams, that on the Shidip Chumodi Pinola, and Bama Tato, San Javas, Milolam, Tejin, Milolam, say that, Tosin, Tobe, that you do that, you do come a Shidip Ganga Panza, that San Javas, to Chagas.
So when the small knowledge obscurations are abandoned, yeah, when the small knowledge obscurations are abandoned, that bodhisattva becomes a Buddha. He achieves the minor path of no more learning. So my explanation so far has been based on this chart. So you should try to understand the explanation based on this chart. What I've explained here differs slightly from what is given in the notes. So those of you who are interested, you know, you can look at the notes. Only after you have understood the explanation and that I've made based on this chart. Only then, if you're interested, then you should look at the notes and see what are the differences. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so of course, if you look at the notes, then you will find some differences. Yeah. And then, you know, if you're interested, you should can you perhaps think of the reasons why there are those differences, and what are the reasons for those differences, and so forth. Yeah. And you can discuss, analyze, you know. The thing is right in front of my eyes, you know, but it's a classic example of awareness to which an object appears but it's not ascertained. Anyway, each of the 10 grounds are associated with perfection. So starting from the first ground, you have the perfection of generosity, then the perfection of ethics, perfection of patience, perfection of joyous perseverance, perfection of concentration, and perfection of wisdom. Then you have the perfection of method, perfection of prayer, perfection of power, and perfection of yishi, exalted wisdom. Yeah.
What in this name? That so tire, that Sashua, Tatata, Parsin, Tatundani, that Satambe Nakabla, that Jimbe Parsin in Yan, Shuji, the Shinaman was talking. Or Toxinita, Saniba Tobin Dogama, that Nancy Tunaja Parsin, Yan Shinaman was talking. Or Toxinita Parsin Jupa, 사례에 가봤다 퍼진 다 신나면 되는데 도미나시 숨겨요. 냠네.
So on each of the grounds, the Bodhisattva acquires you know, very special qualities you know, associated with those perfections and so on. The first ground, the Bodhisattva achieves you know, this very kind of special elevated you know, form of the practice of generosity. And on the second ground, he achieves you know, that you know, very special kind of qualities and practices associated with ethics and so forth. Yeah. So, on each of these grounds, the Bodhisattva achieves you know, very special, many types of qualities. I think there are 12 distinctive qualities. For example, on the first ground, the Bodhisattva, that Bodhisattva is said to be able to enter into 100 concentrations in just one moment. In one moment, he entered in 100 concentrations. He can see 100 Buddhas. He can, in one moment, he can travel to 100 pure lands. And so forth. Yeah. And he's able to emanate 100 replicas of himself, send out 100 emanations. These qualities are further you know, increased, enhanced on the second ground. So on the second ground, that Bodhisattva in one moment can enter into 1,000 concentrations, see 1,000 Buddhas, travel to 1,000 pure lands, emanate, manifest 1,000 emanations. Then on the third ground, those qualities are even you know, greatly enhanced. So in one moment, the Bodhisattva can enter into 100,000 concentrations, see 100,000 Buddhas, travel to 100,000 pure lands, Buddha pure lands, and manifest 100,000 emanations. So these qualities are increased you know, when the Bodhisattva progresses on the grounds. You know. So by the time they are on the 10th ground, I don't think we even want to try, you know, expressing that number, you know, because it's you know, some. I'm not even sure whether there's a term for it. You know, I mean, it's, you know, they, in probably in one moment they can enter into literally, you know, zillions and zillions of, some, you know, huge. It's such a huge number of concentrations, see a huge, you know, unbelievable number of Buddhas, go to an unbelievable number of Pure Lands and manifest, you know, just so many kind of emanations. And this is just talking about the Bodhisattva on the 10th ground. So, you know, these bodhisattvas on the 10 grounds, you know, on these 10 grounds, and they, you know, they enter into, you know, so many kinds of concentrations, you know, they travel to so many pure lands, and they manifest, and then they, you know, emanate so many manifestations, all for the purpose of purifying their obscurations, accumulating merit, and to work for sentient beings. So if you look at how these bodhisattva superiors, you know, how hard they work in order to accumulate merit, then, you know, we know our place, we know how important it is for us at our level to accumulate merit. So you know, now that you've heard a little bit about, you know, how, you know, one becomes a Buddha, you know that Buddha is not some, you know, achieving enlightenment is not a stroll in the park, and a Buddha is not your ordinary guy next door. You know, you think about what Buddha really is. In short, in order to achieve enlightenment, to become a Buddha, to abandon all these obscurations, the afflictive obscurations, and the knowledge obscurations, one has to work so hard, you know, and also to accumulate the merit, you know, to abandon these obscurations. So, you know, and the work starts, you know, of course, the work starts from the beginning, you know, after you have bodhicitta, you know, you enter into the Mahayana path of accumulation, you know. So in the Mahayana path of accumulation, one focuses on the accumulation of the collections, and one focuses on hearing and reflection, especially on the in order to generate the understanding of on realization of emptiness, yeah, isn't it? Then on the minor path of preparation, whatever the ascertainment or the realization of one of emptiness one has, and one meditates on it, you know, in order to derive the wisdom arisen from meditation, yeah. And the meditation on emptiness on the path or preparation is done primarily to in this time is to counteract the manifest conceptions of true existence. Yeah. But then, you know, still one is not realizing emptiness directly yet, yeah. And therefore one does not have the direct or the actual antidote to the afflictions. So come the time when the Bodhisattva is able to see emptiness directly for the first time, then he enters into the Nirvana path of seeing. And only then does he have in his hand, only then does he have in his hand an actual antidote to the afflictions. The actual antidote to the afflictions. And when the Bodhisattva abandons the afflictions with the actual antidote, the affliction that is first abandoned is the intellectually acquired affliction. Only when the intellectually acquired affliction is abandoned, only then does the work of abandoning the innate affliction start. Then when the Bodhisattva starts the work of abandoning the innate afflictions, and all the innate afflictions are not abandoned at one go. The Bodhisattva has to abandon those nine levels, the nine types of the innate afflictions. So it's a long process, yeah. Only after which, you know, is the Bodhisattva free from the afflictive obscurations. But still the work is not done. Still there is the knowledge obscurations to be abandoned. Only after abandoning the afflictive obscurations, only does the work of abandoning the knowledge obscurations start. And then, by progressing on the 8th, 9th, and 10th round, the Bodhisattva gradually abandons the knowledge obscurations. So come the time when the small knowledge obscurations are abandoned, then he becomes Buddha, fully enlightened one. Yeah. So you, from this you can see, you know, Buddha is not your ordinary guy, you know, next door, you know.
So
when we think, you know, even just a little bit or about the qualities that are the Bodhisattvas are said to achieve on the first to the tenth round, it really is difficult, you know, for us to imagine 100 bodies, okay, we accept 1,000 bodies, 100,000, million and billions. By the time I think we probably, you know, we have emotional block and blockage. Especially the Bodhisattva on the tenth round, I mean, it's like the number of emanations they can send out is like, oh, it's similar to numberless, you know. I mean, how are you going to put a number to it? You know? I mean, you know, then if the 10th level Bodhisattva is really so tokong, you know, can you imagine what Buddha can do? I mean, what the Buddha can do is completely beyond, you know, the scope of ordinary thought, you know, beyond inconceivable. Still, so therefore, you know, just by having this rough understanding of the mode of progress on the paths and grounds, you know, and what it takes to be a Buddha, this is just a very rough, you know. Already, you know, you can see, you know, you should be able to see that Buddha is not your ordinary guy next door, right? I mean, you know, you really can, you know, imagine, you really can, you know, have a slight kind of feel of what it takes or what it means to be Buddha, you know, something completely inconceivable. You know? And if you have, so when you think of the Buddha, you know, you really appreciate what the Buddha really is, you know, in terms of qualities, you know, it's how inconceivable. And that's when you have conviction, is faith, you know, when you really have faith in Buddha, yeah.
anything to explain on the chart? Are you clear about the chart? Only this chart, not another chart. You don't understand anything from the chart, ask now. Yeah? Yeah. Okay, come.
Before point B, right, there's you need to obtain, what's that called, the uncontrived bodhicitta. So there's a bracket, aspiring or engaging. So after they obtain the uncontrived bodhicitta, why is the bodhicitta still, like, why are they still aspiring? Since they already have it, why is still aspiring?
So if you look at the ritual for adopting bodhicitta, in terms of the order, one first generates literally generates the aspiring mind generation. I mean, we say bodhicitta, bodhicitta, but same case. Anyway, there's the aspirational mind generation, which involves, the generating the thought, I will achieve enlightenment in order to accomplish the welfare of sentient beings. So generating the aspiring mind generation. Then there is the aspirational bodhicitta with a commitment. Next is generating the aspirational bodhicitta with a commitment. That involves making a pledge to never give up this aspiration to achieve full enlightenment for others. Never. Never to give up. So it's an generating aspiration of bodhicitta with a pledge or commitment. Okay, so first you generate bodhicitta, generate the aspirational bodhicitta, which is just the thought, I will achieve enlightenment for the benefit of our sentient beings. But that does not come with a commitment. You're just generating that mind. The next step is generating aspirational bodhicitta with a pledge or commitment. So essentially, it's the same. Generating the thought to achieve enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. Just that in this time, you make a vow, a pledge, to never give up this aspiration. Never, ever give up. So you're making a vow, a pledge. Only then do you take the bodhisattva vow. Only then you take the bodhisattva vow, which is, you could say, it's generating the engaged mind generation, engaged bodhicitta. Yeah. So when you take the bodhisattva vow, on top of you know, the earlier pledge of never giving up the aspiration to achieve full enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings, on top of that, one is making a pledge, a vow, to practice accordingly as it is intended, the six perfections, which are the deeds of the bodhisattva. It's a step-by-step thing,
yeah.
So when we are training to develop, to develop or to generate bodhicitta, this training requires, it's all about effort. So therefore, it's contrived, because it requires effort. You know. First, you train the mind accordingly in order to generate the thought, thinking I will achieve full enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings. And based on that, then the next step is making a pledge to never give up that aspiration. But it is still, it could be contrived, isn't it? Yeah. Where you're still making effort. So come the time when this thought to achieve full enlightenment for the benefit of all sentient beings is uncontrived, it arises innately, effortlessly. And, that is the time when you become a bodhisattva. That is the time when you have uncontrived bodhicitta. Isn't it? That's the actual bodhicitta, yeah. So come the time when an individual develops, actualizes this uncontrived bodhicitta, he becomes a bodhisattva. Yeah? So this bodhicitta, this uncontrived bodhicitta that is generated, it consists of two, aspirational bodhicitta and engaged bodhicitta. This is not to be confused with what I've said earlier. in terms of the mind is generated, in terms of mind generation, there are two, aspirational mind generation and engaged mind generation. This is not to be confused with what I said earlier. So you look confused, basically.
Confused? No.
So here, the when we're talking about the uncontrived bodhicitta, which is the actual fully qualified bodhicitta, this fully qualified bodhicitta or mind generation is divided into two, the aspirational bodhicitta and engaged bodhicitta. This is not to be confused with what I said earlier about generating the thought to achieve enlightenment in general, and then making a pledge, and then taking the bodhisattva vow, yeah, isn't it? Many of us have taken the bodhisattva vow. We don't have any kind of bodhicitta yet, right? Obviously not. I don't know about you. So this is not the same thing, yeah? You follow? Tio? Tio? So of course, if the question is about the difference between aspirational bodhicitta and engaged bodhicitta, a different answer will be quiet there.
She don't know what she's asking. What happened? Good. When you're confused, you're thinking more. Okay? You are not confused, you're not thinking.
Yeah. So the rest of you are not confused, is it?
Okay. Yeah. Okay. From the chat, From the chat.
Rinpoche, just curious. I think in the last two countless eons, the Bodhisattva couldn't have meditated only 10 times, right?
10 times?
Yeah, because there are only 10 paths of release, uninterrupted path and path of release. So he must have meditated quite a number of times, which is not shown in there.
Okay.
In the last two countless yawns.
Ah.
And there must be numerous other uninterrupted path and path of release.
You say that there are basically more uninterrupted paths than what is actually in the chart, isn't it?
Yeah. Otherwise you have meditated only 10 times. 10 meditations.
I think if you can answer this question, you'll become clearer. If it is the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness, is it necessarily an uninterrupted path? Basically, if you can answer this, then...
Sorry, I don't get it. Can you repeat that?
If it is the wisdom directly perceiving emptiness, while in meditative equipoise, is it necessarily an uninterrupted path? Can you say what an interrupted path is, isn't it? That there are two things that qualify something to be an interrupted path.
Okay. What was that? I only remember that an interrupted path is one which is in the meditative equipoise.
What do you ask? Question? What is your question just now?
My question is, there must be, it looks like, when you sit meditating and then you are meditating a good voice.
Which part you're talking? Part of sin, part of meditation or?
The whole path.
Whole path.
Yeah, I'm talking about the whole last two counts.
Which part you think you need more? Now you tell me. Which part you think you need more? What is missing?
So you are basically saying, according to the chart, the Bodhisattva only in his entire span of his career, he only enters into meditative equipoise 10 times. Basically, that's the point you're saying, right?
That's right.
Yeah, of course, that's right.
But the other times when he's in meditative equipoise, right?
Oh, that's why, if you understand what an uninterrupted path is, then no problem.
No problem.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll go back and think about it. Thank you.
Oh, you wait so long, I only meditate 10 times, right? Like, not worth it, right? No.
Karen Bhuchi would like to check two questions. The general understanding for the two collections is usually for the wisdom and method. But when I first have the first lesson, my understanding is that the two collections is the first collection is for the ordinary Bodhisattva, and the second collection is the Arya Bodhisattva. Am I correct?
So in short, what are the two collections, right? You're not exactly
two definition in my understanding.
So the two collections are, when we say accumulate the two collections, this is more accurate. I mean, that's why I keep saying accumulating the two collections. What do we say usually? Accumulating merit. So it's actually the collection. There are two collections.
Yeah, one's merit,
collection of merit and collection of wisdom. So these are the two collections.
Yeah. So this is a more general definition.
Yeah, these are the two.
So the more definite definition is the collection for ordinary Bodhisattva and doing his path. And the second collection is basically doing the Arya Bodhisattva collections.
The accumulations of the two collections are not done separately, they are done in unison and right from the beginning of the minor path. Yeah. So the accumulation of the two collections are done in unison, starting from the path of accumulation all the way up to the end of the path of meditation. It's not that the ordinary Bodhisattva only accumulates the collection of merit, and then the Bodhisattva superiors accumulate the collection of wisdom. It's not like that. No.
Exactly. So that means that being the two different Bodhisattva, they both collecting the two collections, the merit and wisdom.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, thank you. Then the second question is basically is that I can understand quite well on the four stages of the, the three stages of the Mahayana path of preparation. I can't understand on the meaning where forbearance stages, how to link the meaning of these stages. Where it's like, for example, heat is that there's some generations of it, then it's called heat. But why is called forbearance on the third stage?
The etymology, basically.
Yes.
Comma sonsa. So, だからコマスのそばで。
コマス。あ、リミティシャバ。
コマスの次に、そば。
そば。そばさん、ニャスの道へ。外が座るとか、下から。ニャスの道へ、デントバス。ニャスの道へ、外が静止。
It has to do with language. It works in Tibetan, but in English it's kind of clumsy and perhaps, in my view, doesn't really work, but perhaps I don't know enough to translate. But the point is, the Bodhisattva on the forbearance stage of the path of preparation acquires this confidence, a confidence that he will never be reborn in the lower realms. So, in literally in Tibetan, it says he acquires forbearance. It doesn't sound right in English, isn't it? He acquires that forbearance that he will not be born in the lower realms. It doesn't make sense, right? In English, right? But in Tibetan, it's a seva. So, I mean, if you have any questions pertaining to the chart, you know, you go home and think about it, then you know you can bring it up in class in the future. Yeah. I will start on the Heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra in the next lesson. Yeah. Okay, today is Tibetan 25th, so traditionally we do a short practice of offering a talk. So, page 89 on the Guru Puja book.